Guy Fawr was still interviewing Eddie Steinfeld on February 12th, Eddie Fawr. Okay, so we talked about the theater, Eddie, and now what did they do after the theater? Did they go out to eat? What happened? Tell me a little bit about the social life.
No, it was, either they went home or they went to a restaurant. There was a restaurant on Center Avenue across from Gary Copper Settlement, Weinstein's. And Weinstein's was a big name in the restaurant, in the food business. Weinstein and his wife was a cook in the back, and his sons worked there, and eventually the sons ran out for themselves, and they also opened up restaurants. And the grandsons had a restaurant in Squirrel Hill, and they would eat there, and you wouldn't get it wasn't a kosher meal, but it was a meal. And that was also what they referred to also as kibbutz sanya. You know, in those years you'd have, you know, I mentioned to you before that the Herschel bookstore would be the center for these people, but that was during the day. Now, at night, I mean, you'd have to go someplace for it to exchange ideas, have a discussion on something, and the Weinstein restaurant also served that place, so give a glaze of latte, you know. So they would sit and they would have a discourse and a discussion, and sometimes it got heated and so on and so forth. It's Weinstein's restaurant. Also, you had mentioned about your father, you know, and stuck to my mind that in those years, for a number of years, there was a group of paper hangers that used to come in from Philadelphia, about 30 of them. Moving day was May 1st. On the hill, and everybody moved for some reason or other. I don't know why. Either they went down the hill or they went up the hill. And that is all in the Hill District, you see. Either you went up to Virginia Street or you went down to Newbury Street, or vice versa. We lived on Davenport Street, and we lived on the Virginia Street, we lived on the Newbury Street, we lived on Webster Avenue. So we also made the round, our family. But these paperheads would come in and they would get the rooms ready for the new tenants who are going to move in, and after a month or so being in the city, then they would go back to Philadelphia. They made whatever they could make, and they went back to the respective cities.
Interesting. And okay, now, so how old were you then? About now, about 18.
I've been 18, 19, 20.
Then what happened? Start looking at what was happening with the girls, who was the socialite.
Well, the socialite.
Get into the girls, the courtship.
I tell you, we were so, well, the only social life that was not only bad, but we was the Irving Kaufman Settlement that had dances on, you know, Saturday night with an orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we would go dancing on Saturday night. And in the summertime, up in the roof garden, that's where we danced in the summertime, up in the roof garden with the Adam Crawford Settlement. Not everybody went dancing, and not everybody could dance. I mean, those who could went, and, you know, and well, first of all, you have to understand that you're dealing with a situation where it was depression years, and and dating was not a big thing, you know. Those of us after you're a little older, got to be 21 and 22. I remember from there, when I acted with the Irving Kaufman Settlement Young Players Guild, and I acted with the Irving Kaufman Settlement Players, which was the older group already. You know, the first movie play I did was a play called Brown of Harvard. Like, can you picture me? Kind of quarterback, I mean. And that was the first play that I ever did on the English stage for Brown of Harvard. But then we went to the Y, and from the Y had a very good, one of the best amateur theater records. But you know, composing that Y makes you imagine that the best. But in the city, or in, let's say, in Allegheny County, and about that particular time, the the Playhouse, the Picture Playhouse, got established. And I recall I, with a girl by the name of Pearl Levinson, we were the first people from the Y who played at the Pittsburgh Playhouse. And the Y Playhouse, we wanted to show two Jewish characters, and we fitted the bill. And I remember it being taken out of one play which I was rehearsing, and the Y went over there. And after thereafter, the Playhouse got quite a lot of actors came from the Y Playhouse and played at the So then your social life, as you got older, 21, 22, you know, then you went already to the Y. You were able to take a streetcar, you know, and then you, the clubs started to be developed at the Y. And the Y was more of a Jewish institution than the Irving Kaufman Settlement, because there was a difference, and I think I wonder if I mentioned it to you. The Y was founded by Jews who were sons of Eastern European Jews. The Irving Kaufman Settlement was founded by Reform Jews, and their attitude was a different attitude towards developing the Jewish community. Their philosophy was, we're a melting pot, and we Jews have to become part of the melting pot. Whereas the Jewish Y wanted to retain the identity of being Jewish, the young men and women's Hebrew Association. If I recall, there was no observances of Jewish holidays at the I think I mentioned to you the important thing was just to make sure that those staff were the people would know on the bulletin board that Friday was about to be open to a certain hour before it got nighttime. So you should take a bath so at least once a week they can be clean to usher in the staff.
Most of your apartments had baths and bathrooms.
Well, they may have had, or they may have been, I don't know, it could be sinks, you know, I know we had a bathtub in our house, but I couldn't speak for, you know, and then again, if you had a family of seven, say six people, they can't all take a bath at the same time, so maybe the father would go down, or maybe the mother would go down, the mother would tell you it would be for the men only, and they would do the bathroom.
Who were some of the other names in the Jewish theater at the time? Like, was Enoch Rau or somebody?
No, these people were not.
How about Elliot Albert?
No, they were not. Elliot was not involved with the Jewish theater. Although Elliot, I was very friendly with Rodney Elliot in the 30s. Elliot said, Elliot graduated CMU. I think he was either electrical engineer or he was a Jewish boy and he could not get a job, and he went to work for the Tug Morgan Journal, and he used to travel to the communities getting a subscription for the Yiddish paper. And I remember I went with him a number of times. He used to go to the small communities, traveling out and getting subscriptions for the commitment.
You mentioned the Tug Journal. What were the other Jewish papers? Were there papers, Jewish papers from Pittsburgh? I know there was the Forwards.
There was a Tug, and there was a Forwards. There was a Morgan Journal. The Morgan Journal was an Orthodox paper. The Tug was a national paper, for Zionism and so on and so forth. You see. And the Forwards was a socialist paper. Now, there was a person here in town who was Rabbi Yashinsky's son-in-law, Yael Borkin. Borkin put out a weekly paper, I just can't, the name escapes me, and it would be English Yiddish, it was a paper that he himself put out, and his own philosophy and whatnot, and whatever he thought, he would put out this paper, and it was published by job there at Burger Pitting Company. I can't think of the name. What that paper was. That was a Yiddish paper published here. And they also had originally had the Jewish Criterion, and which was run by, there was a Reformed background there. Alter was the Reformed Jews who were the publishers. Although I remember those years more often that used to be the editor. And then there was a couple of salesmen, Himmelstein and Gollum. I think they may have worked for them. And what they did was they created their own paper called American Jewish Outlook. And they had a professor from the University of Pittsburgh, his name escapes me, and he was the editor. But since you mentioned papers, I was also involved in that because one year they thought that at one period of time in the 30s they brought the Rabbi Silverberg to Pittsburgh, and he ordained himself as the chief rabbi of Pittsburgh. You know, he bestowed that honor by himself. Mm-hmm. And then, in order, he wanted to make a big deal about being installed on the social research in Poland. So they wanted to make a big to-do. And my parents were involved with this thing. And they knew me as a guy who has a gift of gab. I could talk. So they said that maybe we should put out a program book, in conjunction with this big thing that was going to take place. And so I went ahead and I started to sell advertising, to some of the Jewish merchants, take an ad, that's supposed to be a big thing, and so on and so forth. So I remember I was in Kaplan's Bakery at that time, I'm making a pitch to Kaplan why he should advertise, why he should give me an ad for this particular thing, and so on and so forth. And unbeknown to me was Himmelblau standing outside in the other room, and he's hearing me make the pitch. And I'm walking out this way, and I want to talk to you. My name is Himmelblau. I'm at the Jewish Outlook. Would you be interested maybe in working for us? And I said, well, I don't know what this is. Well, look, how about giving me a call and meeting me, and so on and so forth. And, which I did, and I finally went to work for the Jewish Outlook selling space, and I sold the space on not the space for the weekly, I sold the space for the holiday issue, now I get the case over down at the Jobs Center, the community, and I was able to get the non-Jews, if I say this for the record,
sure.
I mean that this time. So I'm getting away from here to steal.
No, we want everything.
Well, I could only say, I remember going into a bank, and the time I went to the person in the bank, and who am I, paused, so next to the shop, I came to see, and I said, the reason why I'm saying that is the other day I was in the office, and I can't think of the professor who was the editor of the paper about. And professor, you know Professor Sons, University of Pittsburgh, he doesn't know, he was talking, and he happened to say, Eddie, I understand you're going to, quote, whatever town it was, but if you're in this town, I want you to look up who's looked up this man I'm talking to. So I would say to him, Isaac, Professor Isaac, I said, Dr. Isaac, I said, why do you want me to see this man? And he said, well, he and I share the same point because we believe a better understanding between Jews and Christians and vice versa, even though we have a positive approach to probably set up, so we share something in common. That would be the introductory offer to soften them up for what? For a man. And then barely I walked out with a man.
That was Asherizer.
Asherizer, yeah.
Now, who were the printers that had Jewish types?
Well, with Rob Berger, he had a Yiddish linotype. And there may have been, I think there was a person on
Courtney.
Thank you. There's a person on Fifth Avenue, Glick. He had a small print shop above the Fisherman's Bakery on the corner there, which would be a bakery between the Mayflower, Corner Logan, and upstairs there was a print shop. I think Glick was a little short, thin man, had a print shop. Now, whether he had Yiddish stuff or not, I don't remember, but he had, he got Jewish, he was Jewish connected. But Berger had, Rob Berger had these Jewish connected. Because there were a lot of smaller shops, one machine operating, but they, at the Yiddish type, that was a good Berger. John Berger.
Well, you remember anything, what was going on in Johnstown and all those little communities?
Well, let me tell you a story about Johnstown. I mean, if you want to hear this story, you know. One year, this company was disintegrated. I mean, they're out of land out there, did nothing to do, so on and so forth. So one of the actors, Peter Mietti, he says, let's go to a town and we'll do a Yiddish show there. So there's a town, this is a good town, he tried to do this town called Johnstown. It's called, I think, Johnstown. So I went to Johnstown as an advance man. I got posters printed, you know, and put out these posters, Yiddish show. So who was in Yiddish show? This white man, his wife, he had a daughter of about 13 or 14 years of age, and Eddie Steinfeld, okay? And the posters, he put out the name of the play, what there is, where it's going to be, admission free. Free admission. Okay. Well, we take the train, you know, to go to Johnstown. Of course, I mean, I went there before, and I come back, but it was more expensive about it. And I got the hall there. I went to the hall, so we paid him $10 something for the hall, you know, for the night. We come there, and we figured, yeah, there's about 25 people, you know, who came to this. And what was the idea? Come to the show, they're doing intermission. You make a pitch. He gets out of the stage there. He starts making a pitch, you know, and how bad it's for us, you Jewish actors, that we have to do this thing, and we want to support the world. We're doing this thing for free, but we need some money, you know, so go for it. Give whatever you can. So I go around with the basket, where was I carrying a hat, I don't remember. And people threw a dime, a quarter, whatever they threw in. So I take the money on stage, so he counts up. We count the money, so we doesn't even pay our train fare that we came in on. So he starts to plead with him. I was so ashamed. I mean, I ran off the stage. I said, I felt so bad at him because after all, he's going back to New York. I'm in Pittsburgh. I need to use his shoes again, you know, so come again to them. But that's the way that, those are some of the stories I could tell you about the like about the Jewish theater during a small town.
Now, you were with the newspaper working, doing the advertising at the newspaper.
Oh, no, for the Jewish Club, I did that, and what can I say to you? I did not have the stick-to-itiveness to pursue it further,
mm-hmm.
and they would always be after me, because, hey, the first few weeks I came by to these towns, and when I came back, and I was a star salesman for them. I bought him some nice advertising, and so money had no value because it was gone today. What did you have? I mean, there was no. What was the future? I mean, so you had the bucket. You couldn't build anything. You see, people were like numbers and gambling and whatnot. You know, this was it. So during the picture, you made a buck. But the money came and went there. People, you know, you wanted to make that buck and. So you could spend the bucket. So if you made a dollar, so you bought yourself a necktie, you bought yourself a shirt. Money didn't mean that much to me. And I cannot speak for somebody else. But as a rule, you know, a lot of my friends, I mean, the money is too expensive.
How about your wife? Was she involved in the...
No, wait, you've won to you later. I mean, this is... We're in the 30s.
Now we were working at the Jewish paper doing the advertising, and then we were
I mean, I say, then...
You were still living with your mother and father.
Oh, yes, yes, I was, yeah, that's right. I was living, and I was still, yeah, I was selling, you know, also, then I went to printing. I, you know, it was, then I managed, then Lando decided, after a while, he decided to have a movie house. He decided to go to every studio, and so he did. So he called me when I'd be the manager of his movie house.
The same location,
the
same,
same building. Same building, so... So I became the manager of the movie house, and I, you know, I got picked up the film, so I was here. But then again, if there was, I didn't particularly care about it because paid me the total sum of $15 a week, and there were no benefits, no nothing. And I wasn't going to play. I mean, I didn't want to be held down to a job. And at that particular time, that was on 1939, I think it was, that I became involved with the Jewish World's Fair that we had at the Y, and I was chairman of that thing, and there was the meetings, and I was up at the movie house, I'd be open at 1 o'clock, I'd be at the Y at 1 o'clock, and then nobody'd open at the movie house, and the film was not there. If the film wasn't, the film would not be there because he did not pay the bill for the film. They would not send any film, you know. I mean, he wasn't the best guy who was in business. I mean, did I tell you the story about bringing in the company back to New York?
No.
Huh? Do you have time to listen to this?
Yeah.
Or is it,
is that your coming tape?
Sure, huh?
Yeah.
No. No, I tell you what, I'm wondering whether I can, maybe I'm repeating myself. What's
no,
the,
what's it?
The
often. It's
time,
all right.
The time when I bought the excursion tickets?
No.
Well, one time Mr. Lando called me up and said, Eddie, I want to see you come down to the office. Well, Mr. Lando had an office, and we have a little room there, and in that room you'd have a little a fence, you know, a guardrail or something, and the secretary would be there, the people who came to pay the rent on his side, and then he had a private office, and he had one of these old-fashioned cash registers, you know, so every time somebody came in there, they would come in to pay him. Every week they would come in paying whatever it is, 50 cents or something for rent. Just ping, get home. I mean, he collected the 50 cents of the cash register. He did not have a drawer or anything.
He had a ring.
Yeah, he had a ring. Well, I walked in there and he says, Eddie, you saw face. I am thinking, what do you think if we have Yiddish theaters coming to us? It's not going to be a good idea, Mr. Lando. I think the Yiddish community, the Jewish community, they'd like to have Yiddish theater, which is coming soon, you know. Well, I tell you what, besides I'm going to have Yiddish theater, and I made arrangements to have a company coming to Pittsburgh, and I would like very much for you to go to New York to bring the company in. Well, I made it. I'm going now as a real big man. I'm going to New York, and I'm going to bring in this Jewish company. You know, this is
in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, after all, that's big, I'm going to New York. He said, fine. He said, now what I would like to do, I don't know if you remember those years, used to be excursions to New York, okay? So what, we discussed it, okay.
No.
Well, you know,
and then my dad used to go to Lansing.
So yes, well, that's New York, you both know. So what, you'd buy an excursion ticket for $6.50. You'd leave Pittsburgh Saturday night, go to New York, be there Sunday morning, spend the whole day in New York, and Sunday night you come back to Pittsburgh. It would cost to go through by bus to New York $13. Okay, so it's cheaper for you to buy an excursion ticket by train for $6.50 to throw the goddamn ticket away. See, because you're saving yourself. So, in Sweden, I mean, among us Jews, I mean, we found a gimmick. We can make a buck. The person who comes in from New York with that excursion ticket, what's it, why should he throw it away? So we had there fellas down there, said, are you going back to New York? No, we're going to do this. Nothing. So find this. Well, can I have it? I'm going to go to New York. And my sister, some sort of said, yes, here's the ticket. And they gave us the ticket. Now, they in turn sold the ticket to somebody who wanted to go to New York. For a dollar. A dollar. Yeah, they were broke for a dollar.
But they were brokers.
Yeah, they sold these. Yeah, so yeah, they did. Now, there was also, so and they had a place on Robert Street, somebody, butcher, the barber shop, that was the headquarters. I mean, somebody used to call up, you have a ticket, you know, and you know it. So then the people who bought excursion tickets, they got wiser. They weren't giving away the food. Now they were selling it for a dollar, you know. They'll tell you they'll pay part of their expense. So a customer comes to Pittsburgh, $5.50. They get two, it costs them $4.50, whatever the market would bring. So Lando said to me, I want you to go to New York, get on the train, and buy tickets. Look at my tickets. This isn't a very easy thing to do. You know, I think they want to go tickets. Well, you know, I can do anything. You know, ask me to do it, but he did not trust me. The money he gave to his son, the whole, going to New York.
You know, with you.
Yeah, so the son gets on the train, and he has the money. You know, he wouldn't tell me he had the money. So Sunday, so Saturday night, we go on the train to New York, and now you see him at night. I sit down beside this person. I, you know, during the entire night, I make the round. We sit down, strike up a conversation with somebody, then come around. Are we going back to Pittsburgh? We went back to Pittsburgh. Well, it was nice knowing you, so on and so forth. Who invites? I'm going to the next one. I'm looking for. So I lined up people to sell me their tickets after we get out of the train. The conductor, I'm standing between the two trains, the two cars. Who approached me? The conductor. He said, I know you. Yeah. I said, how do you know me? He said, you travel these trains often, don't you? He said, well, you don't buy these tickets. I said, you got the wrong person. That's a news. I thought, wow, how can you tell me like this? Of course, I don't know why, but he spotted me anyway, but nothing. So then we left the train, and then I waited for the people to get off the ground to the terminal, the station. Then he would hand me the money. He just went $2 for the bargain, whatever. Okay, and I would buy the ticket. And I recall, I was a person who I went to see, and that's the same person who I went to Johnstown with, and the third person, same guy. The first time that I met him. So I go up to his place. He lived in a cold water flat on East 15th Street. And it's about 7 o'clock in the morning. I knock on his door, and then, you know, knock on the door, who's that? My name is Eddie Steinfeld. Mr. Lando from Pittsburgh sent me, you know, to talk to you. And he opens up the door. I must have been at that time up there. I was about 21 years old. He opens up the door, and he's getting out of bed, and he's wearing a mossy bathrobe, you know, he's like that. And he says, come on in. And we came into this kitchen there, and there's a big table there, and I remember the big cabinets, you know, the old wooden side cabinet. Sit down, and he opens up the one of the doors and takes out a big bottle of whiskey, and one of these old, old-fashioned, with the whiskey, with the tea glasses, you know, the thick glasses, and he pours himself a drink. First thing in the morning, now what is on your mind? I tell him Mr. Lando sent me with tickets for you people to come tonight. There's an opening of night. He said, he saw it to cuss Lando out. Not since after all, dying up, you know. He said, well, he supposed to have called me and told me. He said, where am I going to get the actors? He said, they're up in the Catskill Mountains. I don't know where they're at. He said, I got to tell them. I said, Mr. Whiteman, I said, I don't know. I had the tickets here. It's for you. Whoever comes, you try to get them. We go back to Pittsburgh tonight. But he felt so well, that night, I mean, we met, and a couple did not show up. We were supposed to come, but we couldn't be back. And that night, we took the train back to Pittsburgh, and Lando was able to bring in a company of actors. But there was about 10 people that came in. The biggest 10 people came in. So if you pay one way by bus, $130, and I guess it cost them, what, $40 or something? Or Okay, but that was another experience I had with the Jewish theater.
Mm-hmm. oh, okay, we're going to quit. That was really fun. I can't help but laugh at Eddie.
By the way, you know,